Recreational marijuana is moving closer to reality in Michigan, as we heard earlier in the hour, being able to walk in and buy something. But there are voices from the medical community urging caution, especially when it comes to teenagers and their exposure to highly potent cannabis products. Dr. Stacey Gruber is a clinical neuroscientist in the School of Psychiatry at Harvard. She studies how marijuana affects our brains, and she's been watching what's been happening in states where marijuana was first legalized, Colorado, Washington State. Dr. Gruber, what are the most significant findings about the effects of using marijuana on adolescent brain development?
So I think it's really important to remember that during adolescence, or even into what we call emerging adulthood, the brain is, quote, under construction. That is, it's not fully developed. We're in this period of what we call neurodevelopmental vulnerability, which means that any exposure to drugs, alcohol, illness, injury, may render us less able to do certain things later in life. Cannabis or marijuana is no exception. What we find from a number of different studies is that early, frequent exposure to cannabis may result in some longer-term or some later difficulties with tasks relative to people who didn't necessarily have the same amount of exposure or who were exposed later. That's very important.
So, you know, marijuana use, as we know, is nothing new. There are plenty of perfectly well-adjusted folks out there, functional adults, professionals, parents, even grandparents who use pot.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, though, we're hearing that marijuana is more potent than what adults may have used back in their school days. What can you tell us about that?
So it's a great point, and it's something I always remind people to keep, quote, in mind. So cannabis or marijuana today is very different from cannabis of decades ago in that the potency, the amount of THC, which is the primary psychoactive constituent, what, quote, gets people high, that's what our recreational consumers are looking for. The level of THC in today's adult use or recreational marketplace is significantly higher than it was back in the day. It's about 300% higher than it was. It's gone from about 4% in terms of the national average to about 17%. That's a big jump. And it's true, you know, with regard to what you say, how do we let kids understand that this may be a problem when their parents or grandparents may be using cannabis? And in some cases, the very same product. But it's important to keep in mind that, first of all, again, when we use things as an adult, that is, we're past the period of developmental vulnerability, it won't necessarily have the same, quote, hit or same effect on the brain. And folks who are using for medical purposes are often using in a very different way and certainly for different goals, which actually drives the product choice. So very important to keep in mind whether it's recreational or medical use. We have a whole medical cannabis program here at McLean that I started 5 years ago to look exactly at the differences between medical cannabis patients and recreational cannabis consumers.
So when we think about, for example, a report that was done by the Marijuana Policy Group for the state of Colorado for the Department of Revenue, you know, looks at exactly what you say about average marijuana flower potency. They say that's increased somewhat since 2014, but where you really see some kind of eye-popping numbers are the concentrated extract products.
Sure. Those concentrated products, and for those who may not be familiar, concentrates are products made specifically to be high in THC, and they're made using lots of different techniques and approaches. Some require solvents, which is not so great. Some are solventless. But regardless of the approach and the extraction method, the goal is to create a product that has what we call north of, that is more than, 35 or 40% THC. Now, some of these products go up to 80, 85. The highest one we've seen come through our lab is about 91%. That's a lot of THC. And of course, one might expect, especially in our most vulnerable consumers, that is our adolescent population, there may be additional risk conferred if they're using these very highly concentrated products compared to flower that might be higher today in terms of potency, but still is about, you know, 17% versus 80%. So it's very important to keep these things in mind.
If you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Dr. Stacey Gruber, who is a Harvard psychiatrist who has been studying how marijuana affects our brains as we talk about particularly teens being exposed to cannabis and what we're learning from states like Colorado and Washington State, where marijuana was first legalized. And Dr. Gruber, what do the numbers tell us about the rate of teens who use pot after legalization? Because we kind of gotten the impression before the push to legalization that it had kind of stalled out.
In previous years, the Monitoring the Future study, which is a national survey that allows us to look at 8th, 10th, and 12th graders in terms of what they're using with regard to lots of different substances and alcohol, it looked very much as if we were starting to see a leveling off of cannabis, which was very important. We have different data from different sources depending on, you know, what you're looking at with regard to the numbers of people using. And actually, I would say that the fastest growing consumer group of cannabis these days are those over the age of 60. They've had an exponential increase in the number of people using over 60 or 65. In comparison, our 18 to 25-year-olds and even our younger folks, you know, 12 to 24, certainly have considerable rates of use. They're not growing at the same rates. But again, with increased potency and additional potential risk of negative outcomes, we need to be mindful of anyone who is being introduced to cannabis concentrates, for example, just as an example, early on, as that may confer additional risk for some negative outcomes. The numbers are a little bit more difficult to interpret. Mm. In states where there's been legalized medical and then recreational cannabis, it's very tempting to say, well, more people are using, more kids are using. You have to really look at the base rate before legalization and, in fact, the numbers of people who are, quote, willing to use versus those who are actually using.
And a story in the Washington Post cites a survey done by the state of Washington for its Healthy Youth survey, finding that many teens consider weed to be less risky than alcohol or cigarettes. What do you think when you hear that?
I think it makes total sense. If you're a teenager or an emerging adult, how could you possibly think something is risky if, in fact, you're watching people use it for medical purposes? I mean, that's a difficult thing to argue out of. Yes, it's very harmful, but in fact, your grandmother is using it. But in fact, your best friend's mother is using it. That's a difficult thing for people to understand. And we've seen perception of risk decrease. Perception of risk and harm tends to drop, and increased use rates go up. It's sort of this inverse correlation. You know, if you don't perceive something as risky or harmful, you're more likely, perhaps, if you're inclined to use, to go ahead and start. But I can certainly understand the problem. The message, then, has to be very clear to our adolescents and our emerging adults. What we're saying is this is a particularly vulnerable time, not just for marijuana or cannabis, for many things. And that's the important thing. You know, when you're a little bit older, we're using it in a very different way for different reasons. And again, that really does change the frequency and the magnitude of use in most of our medical patients. It's a very different story. We always say it's not about just say no. It's about saying just not yet and allowing people to really understand the potential for negative outcome. Doesn't mean everybody will have it. But it's really important to understand that it's not necessarily a completely harmless substance, as many, many people believe.
And Dr. Gruber, when you say negative outcome, you know, in a day-to-day life for a kid who's affected negatively, physically or mentally, their health's affected, what does that look like?
So most of the time, in terms of our adolescent cannabis users, it's not necessarily that we see the day-to-day, quote, decrements. Kids actually seem to be doing reasonably well. Some have argued that they actually don't necessarily achieve the same level of educational attainment. Their motivation may be slightly lower. They may not engage in as many social activities. I'm not sure the data is really, really clear on that. What we do see is later, when we see them in their 20s, we see some additional difficulty doing tasks that require what we call frontal or executive processing. So the ability, for example, to utilize feedback to change your behavior, the ability to make complicated decisions in short periods of time, the ability to inhibit inappropriate behaviors or responses seem to be a little bit more challenging for those who begin using cannabis early on and who use in high amounts and with great frequency. So it's sort of like betting on the future. You want to bet on yourself, right? You want to allow yourself to be the very best you can be, and it doesn't mean you'll never try cannabis or never use cannabis. It means that during this period, it's very important to be mindful that there may be some negative outcomes.
Dr. Gruber, you were quoted in that Washington Post story saying, and I'm quoting you here, policy seems to have outpaced science when it comes to how we're regulating marijuana. So what kinds of changes to policy seem wise, seem needed to you when it comes to teens and marijuana in this world we live in?
Great question, because we do have some policies in place with regard to teens and adolescents in that legally, you really can't use until you're a certain age. You're not going to be able to be a legal consumer until you're 21. When I think of policy outpacing science, I think of the things like, unfortunately, states have passed laws about adult or recreational cannabis use without necessarily understanding how best to educate different consumer groups. It's all in the educational message. Again, nobody wants to be told you can never do this, never do that. We know about prohibition and how that was, it was a remarkable failure.
It certainly was.
We don't want a repeat of that. And again, I don't know if it's your experience. My experience with some of our younger folks is if you tell them not to do something, they may very well do it when they might not have anyway. So it's really about having a good open dialogue about the potential negative effects. Again, it doesn't happen to everyone, mm-hmm. but just being mindful of the fact that products today are different from products in the past. We don't know what people will look like after many years of, let's say, concentrate use compared to flower use. We don't know how that will confer additional risk for having, let's say, greater difficulties with some of these types of behaviors or tasks. So if we don't know, we have to be mindful about allowing people to know. They should be mindful and careful about what they choose to do.
What kind of policy things should happen in terms of perhaps regulating where retail and medical pot shops were opening? Because it was kind of eye-opening to realize that, for example, in Seattle, dispensaries are open near high schools.
Yeah, I think that's been a huge concern. And states, of course, differ with regard to what they will and won't allow with regard to adult or recreational dispensaries versus medical dispensaries in proximity to places that have lots and lots of adolescents. You know, I think it's important to be mindful of the geographic location of some of these spots. It's also important to consider for at least some groups of consumers, primarily our most vulnerable consumers, some products are not really the kinds of things that we want them to have any access to. Again, these are the things that are typically north of 60, 70, 80% THC, probably not the best thing for the developing brain. Do we have hard, fast data on it? No. Do we know from previous work looking at estimated potency of products and outcome? Yeah. So we can sort of use the transitive property and say A plus B equals C. It's not likely to be a positive thing if you are a young person whose brain is still, quote, under construction, to expose that brain to lots and lots of THC, which has been shown to be deleterious or not so great for the normal developing brain in terms of its trajectory.
Dr. Gruber, finally, what would be your warning to teens and parents in states like Michigan where marijuana is newly legal?
In terms of a warning, what I might say is have conversations. Open up the dialogue. The less judgment people feel one has about this particular topic, the more likely they are to engage in open, honest conversation. I can't tell you how many people say, oh, listen, my kids never tried it. And then I see their son or their daughter, and that may not be the truth. So I think having open, honest conversations is very important. I think it's very important to understand that kids and emerging adults are smart and are interested in understanding what they can about cannabis and marijuana more than people might imagine. We actually get really thoughtful questions from some of our folks, and that's very encouraging. So I think having an open, honest approach and sort of what I would call a free exchange of information, very important, non-judgmental, and just sort of being clear about the message, which is we are not telling you you can never do this. We're telling you that your brain, again, is vulnerable in a way that it will not be forever, necessarily. Unfortunately. So it's important to be mindful about the choices we make today for the later outcomes tomorrow.
Dr. Stacey Gruber, clinical neuroscientist with Harvard. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for sharing your work with us.
Thank you so much. Take care.